He is.
We're going to open the 2620 and have.
Oh, they are.
Well, they're at 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection Government Efficiency to order efficiently 5 minutes late. And first up, I would like to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2620 to accommodate the schedule of Representative Clem. Don't get used to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from here in, you're in it right now, District 21 in Salem. And I'm pleased to appear before you to talk a little bit about House Bill 2620 and its genesis. The bill, you know, as you can see on the paper, directs the governor to develop a reorganization plan for economic development agencies, community development service agencies, and natural resource agencies over the next 2 years, and then sunsets January 2nd, 2015. So the question is, what's this all about? And I've had the opportunity to travel around the state in a variety of capacities, but you know, primarily we had a series of statewide hearings back when I was on the Land Use Committee as a member. I've traveled around when I was chairing the Ag Committee. It was called Ag and Rural Communities, and we had hearings around then, and then in another variety of other capacities. And I've been struck repeatedly in all parts of Oregon, whether it's Baker City or down in Medford, by really great visionary people in communities who have a vision for their region often that they want to implement. And what they routinely find in the state partners is more of a regulatory sort of checklist approach. Did you get your removal fill permit? Yes. Did you, you know, get your, have you checked with LCDC if this is zoned correctly? Oh, not yet. Have you, you know, done your wildlife mitigation studies? And it's kind of a, you know, almost, it's not a partnership. It's a regulator. And so the goal is to have a more collaborative approach from the state side when a local community or region has a vision that doesn't waive the regulations, but still has a how can we get to yes sort of philosophy rather than a did you check the checkbox philosophy. And it's key that the standards aren't weakened. That's not the point. The point is, are there ways through upfront collaboration, agencies, economic development, or natural resource? I just rattled off a bunch of natural resource, but same thing could apply to economic development entities. It's like, well, we have this loan fund, but you know, you have to meet all these criteria, rather than thinking through, wow, this is a fantastic idea. How do we make our programs match through either rule or statutory changes or policy changes? And you know, let me give you just a few examples. So Baker City, this is going back like 5 years. So they sort of dreamed up a vision for themselves that I'm sure Representative Smith can talk about, revitalizing their downtown and developing kind of this route that people could start in Baker City and then go out like a, almost like a circuit they have in Switzerland where you stay at a bed and breakfast or a hostel kind of alpine lodge off in the mountains one day and then you take your hike or bike and go on for another 20 miles and stay another one. Well, to look at a project like that, you've got to look at, okay, is it EFU or not? You know, are these things being, are the paths paved or not? Are they being built on, you know, a wildlife corridor or not? And so they had this great vision for how to revitalize their community. And the agencies involved, again, unless somebody who's really excited about the idea at the state level, can end up just coming in with kind of a heavy hand. Southern Oregon, so ready. They have, you know, this is going back 3 years probably. I went down and met with the folks there, and they talked about how to really add into their mix the value-added part of viticulture. So not just the wineries, but working with the community college to learn how to be world-class winemakers, and not just the farmer, you know, or grower, but how to add value for the young people there to stay in that region, work in that industry. And so, you know, people in these economic development corporations or these economic development entities or these community development coalitions in North Portland, they come up with ideas all the time, and then it feels like they hit a very reluctant entity when it comes to the state partner. So the goal is see what we can do without weakening the standards to make it more of a how can we get to yes than it is a I'm here to put the screws to you to see if you did everything correctly. And sometimes there's going to be challenges as they develop this plan that, you know, this plan would come back for legislative approval, obviously, and the various components would come back. So we'll hear about some challenges where people will say, yes, it's great that that agency wants to do that, but we're the structural engineers and we don't want them playing that role because that's like playing structural engineer at the agency level and we don't want that. So I'm not expecting that everything that comes back is something we'd be interested in adopting, but I am expecting that the agencies would know that the legislature is interested in having them become more to the regional ideas and the community-based ideas. And, you know, obviously this is directing the governor to do something, so, you know, instead of him vetoing this bill, hopefully we can get him excited about wanting to do this as well, since it's the legislature directing him to do something. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. So that's the genesis. That's what this is all about.
Questions? Representative Riley.
So the question I have, and I know just about enough about what I'm going to ask the question about to be dangerous, but I'll ask it anyway. So how does this fit in relationship to, and I believe this started in the last session, the regional teams or that mm-hmm. are out in the specific communities now that are different than what was there before. So what does this do to complement or add to that?
Yeah, so the regional solutions team, at one time they were called other things. We've called them economic revitalization teams. We've called them, I think, community solutions teams yep. before. I forget exactly what their name is right this moment. But the complement is that there are people out there who usually one person assigned to a region or a county or an area, mm-hmm. but they don't really have the tools to get the agencies to think in a different manner. Like, they try, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily quite have the bully pulpit to change agency behavior because they're not, you know, I mean, they can go back to the governor's office and say, hey, I'm dealing on this project and this one agency is giving us really grief, and see if the governor's office wants to kind of come down on them. The goal is, instead of having a piecemeal approach where that person flags something and it comes back, let's see if there's an upfront way to have a plan that would involve reorganizing to be responsive. I do envision those efforts, those regional solutions efforts, to be something that this plan would in some way sort of formally tie to, so it would be coordinated. So say, if through the regional solutions process, the Umatilla Basin process, that's what they've envisioned, if that's been endorsed by the regional solutions either officer or, you know, that their sort of advisory group, that's the kind of thing that triggers the collaborative approach. So it's not meant to be separate. It's meant to have them be a vetting, and then the agencies have a little bit more sort of oomph behind the push that this isn't just one person who's assigned to Baker County trying to get one thing done. This is a regionally endorsed concept, the way we might when we do coordinated transportation projects and the local JPAC says, this is our list of projects. The state knows, yes, let's get on board and try and make this happen.
Thank you.
Questions, Representative Kinnegar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I used to work for Oregon Solutions, so that was one of my questions. And I'm just wondering if you've had any discussions with Greg Wolf from mm-hmm. Regional Solutions or anyone from the governor's team, and what nature of that is. What do they think about this?
They're officially neutral, I think, on all bills, including this one, I would guess. But I believe that they, would be excited to continue to have conversations about the work that they're doing and how the legislature can get more involved in this, provide more funding for it, you know, because it is helping all over Oregon. And it helps us resolve rather intractable debates we often have around here. And then if we kick it off to them and they actually do the work, you end up with these, you know, ribbon cuttings like we had last week where you know, they've solved some pretty difficult problems. Sometimes they take longer, sometimes they take less time. So I think that they would be interested in the concepts. I don't think they would make any pledges on what would be in those plans now because they don't know either.
Other questions, Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, Representative, good to see you. Miss our good times on House Ag. Tell me what you envision see happening between now and 2014 to actually, in terms of from the governor's perspective, how is this process going to be put together to put the plan together so we have something concrete mm-hmm. to look at for that 2014 session?
So I'm not sure if I can't remember if you're on Ways and Means or not, but one of the things that they did recently through the budget building process was rather than just have agencies engage in soliciting in an informal way, maybe from their stakeholder groups, what budget proposals they should make to the governor to then decide what gets put in the budget for the legislature to review. They formalized and instituted these buying teams made up of community members who looked at agencies' budgets and advised them, and then in some cases, you know, added things into the governor for what they thought as a non-agency, self-interested, particular, you know, budget person, what should be in there. I view this sort of the same thing. There would be these sort of stakeholder groups that normally maybe don't get included in policy development at the agency level. They would be asked, and particularly these regional community groups like So Ready or here at SEDCOR, and you know, I think Representative Lively worked at one at Lane County for a long time. I think they would get asked to participate in this process. You know, agencies, I'm sure, are always a little nervous whenever they see reorganization plans, so you want to have some people in there to give a process, and then I think the governor basically would take under advisement what all these folks said, but in the end, it would be the governor and, you know, his more internal team that would develop the plan. And the agencies would, of course, be participating in this as well, but this is really meant to be a plan that's inclusive of stakeholder input from the regions and the communities. And it could get a little awkward where sometimes they're going to tell some stories that where agencies are going to have to think, oh boy, somebody from my staff did that. But, you know, the point isn't to be punitive. It's to figure out what's working and what isn't. And particularly in rural Oregon, where economic development projects are hard enough without having to figure out after the fact, once you're already deeply into it, how many new permits and how much money you have to spend, if you could have had a more upfront collaborative kind of plan, you can really get a lot further ahead. And I've been involved in these, or we've passed legislation that clearly said we want to do something, and we're still a few years into it, and a lot more money and permits and surprises that, again, would have been better to know up front. Maybe we wouldn't even have passed the bill in the first place if that was really the case.
Good. Thanks. Appreciate the answer. Other questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I share with the committee, we brought up Baker County. Actually, my company serves as the contract agent to provide economic development in Baker County, and so I appreciate the kudos there. Everyone's working hard in Baker County. One of the observations I have is that so much of this is personnel-driven. Mm-hmm. Right now in Eastern Oregon, particularly in Northeast Oregon, folks are working really, really well together. But that's because the personnel work really, really mm-hmm. well together. What I might like to see, in addition to what you're doing, is just a reporting back to the legislature about how the regions are working. Mm-hmm. Because I would anticipate, I might predict, that what's going on in our area may not be the case in other areas.
Yeah, sure.
And so it might be nice for the legislature to know where those areas are working really well and where those areas of weakness might exist, so that way we can try and focus on those areas mm-hmm. where weaknesses are occurring.
Yeah, I think that's good input, and you know, I
appreciate you bringing this forward.
I just think, in general, communities who have, especially ones that were hard hit by other factors outside their control, when they step up and create a vision for what their future could look like, it's very important that we try and help. Unless it's just compromising core standards as Oregonians that, you know, we just cannot live with, that's a different story. But that's usually not the case. And some really great efforts have been slowed down. So one more specific example. I could envision a scenario where the plan says something like, you know, and I have some other legislation on this topic that may be in front of this committee. I can talk more about it later. In rural areas in particular, the ability to build a project, just any project, it requires building inspectors to come out and do it. Well, in town, when I want to get a building inspector, someone from the city of Salem will just come over, you know, that afternoon to the job site. Well, it's like a 4-day, you know, driving and hotel exercise. So could a reorganization plan figure out how to get a multidisciplinary sort of person who can combine electrical and blah, 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 you know, all in one thing? Maybe they can. But it would be easier for economic development projects if it wasn't so difficult to have fragmented, segmented approval processes in several different agencies on how to do something. Or natural resource. You know, if there's a natural resource ombuds person who could at least collect the data for LCDC and ODF&W and DSL and DEQ all in one visit instead of four visits spread out over 3 months. Let's just see if we can do it in a two-day visit to whatever the project is. That kind of thing.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Vega Peterson.
Yes. Hello. Hi. So I really like the idea of this, especially the streamlining the process to make it easier to get things done. I'm just curious, do you see any impact on Metro, since that's already set up as a regional government situation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Vega Peterson. I wouldn't say on Metro as a unit of government, except to the extent that they have something that they want to do, like create more open spaces, or they're going through, you know, long-term discussions about farmland versus other things. And then when they can come to a consensus and they still have to get agency sign-off, it would be nice to have things organized in such a way that we were participating. In Metro's particular case, that unit of government, they're pretty sophisticated and have enough staff that usually they are participating. So, you know, it wasn't like LCDC was or DLCD was not involved in the urban rural reserves process. They were involved the whole time. So it was, there was pretty good coordination there because they have so many folks that know how to pick up the phone and get Richard Whitman in the meetings and that kind of thing. But within the metro region, generally, there are community groups and in all parts of Portland. There's this thing right now where Apano is working with East Portland on local business redevelopment. They don't necessarily know that they probably should check with ODOT and all these other folks before they start too far down the road. If we had a way that everybody knew about to approach state government and get a lot of those things in one, you know, one initial consultation on how to advise people in community-based groups who don't have a bunch of staff and they don't know how to come down to Salem particularly and, you know, lobby for changes to legislation. And I can see it, you know, you saw the redevelopment in North Portland. You saw a lot of things that did work, but there's a lot of places in the metro region that aren't yet where they want to be, and they have dreams for their neighborhoods as well. And in some cases, the state has a big role because there's either a highway going through there or, you know, it's outside the UGB, but still, you know, some theoretically a debate about land use rules, that kind of thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, just a couple perhaps questions from me. A couple, sure, things I stumbled across when I read this bill. I stumbled across the word governance in it, and it sort of troubled me a little bit about exactly what that meant, you know, of having that local governance over state, I guess, resources to some degree. And I think that the bill really wasn't about that in the terms of the way I was thinking of governance. So that was one thing. And I was also thinking, geez, we have Business Oregon, who already does, you know, is doing a pretty good job, I think, in this sort of realm. But your bill is really looking at a little bit broader scope than just Business Oregon. You're looking at sort of a multi-agency program, right, to take on particular projects, whether they're in, you know, a Business Oregon realm or a Department of Ag realm, right, or something else. So you're just looking at more of a program type of collaboration approach, where the state is a partner with the local players in trying to get a successful program up and going.
Mr. Chair, you're right. Yeah, you are right. And governance probably isn't the best word there. You know.
Yeah, it sounded like you were creating. Right. I mean, when I first read it, I thought, oh, he's creating little sub-governments, right, right, you know, right, that have control over the state resources without any accountability to the, right, state of what they're doing.
Yeah, you're right. For example, SEDCOR or SoReady are private membership association, right, groups. They aren't a unit of government. The desire isn't to have them get to force state agencies to do anything. It's they want to present ideas. And I remember particularly Ron Fox, who's at SoReady, said, you know, if you all looked at our ideas more like a venture capital firm does and isn't so prescriptive about individual things, but says, come in and make me a pitch for what you all want to do down there. And there's a board of people at the state level, and they hear the idea, and they trust the management team, and they can say, yeah, we'll invest state money into that. That's a good idea. He said you would completely redefine economic development development versus more, we have these programs, and does your, how can you change your vision to fit our loan fund rules? That's different. It's not as exciting. It's not a partnership. It's we've got a bunch of programs, and your idea is probably not going to work with our programs. Darn. And we don't want that. We want the, how can we work with you to get your idea funded, essentially?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and relating to clause also caught my eye. Reorganization of state agencies, that's enough to intrigue a lot of discussion, I'm sure. So, anyway, I appreciate this, and I'll just make a comment about Representative Smith's comment. I think that, you know, there are a lot of programs that we have around the state where things are working well in certain arenas, sure. And if we can figure out what they are and try to put together and figure out where the gaps are, this bill would make a lot of sense to me then. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Falling back now on your statement. The part of the bill that I really appreciate is line 15, where it identifies reforms that will enhance the goals of reducing cost duplication and the fragmentation of functions. In our area, we've got a solutions team that works pretty well together, but as issues surface, which they do, between agencies, it seems like that communication is there, but it never surfaces to a point where we as a body might be able to address that mm-hmm. to then help at the mm-hmm. local level. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're really onto something with line 15. So that's my last comment, Mr. Chair.
Delete the rest of the bill and we'll keep line 15. Yeah.
And change relating clause. We're governance out of there. We're good to go.
Well, thank you very much, okay. Representative Clem. I think we're going to move on. You've talked entirely way more than you probably should have.
Not uncommon, as you know.
I appreciate you coming forward with this.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for that, and I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2620, and we'll come back to it, because I want to make sure we get Senator Starr, who's probably got other things going on as well, and we'll bring him up and open a public hearing on 2373. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you today on House Bill 2373. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I have the distinct privilege of representing Western Washington County in the Oregon Senate. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2373. It's a fantastic piece of legislation that looks remarkably similar to Senate Bill 299, which is a bill that I introduced this legislative session, and actually a bill that I introduced last legislative session, late in the session, and really not with enough time to really to address the issues that are raised here. Basically, what House Bill 2373 does is it creates a process whereby the legislature would review state agencies and commissions and boards on a regular basis. And it's not a new concept. It's not something that's completely out of the blue. I first learned of this because of my experience working through the National Conference of State Legislatures and learned of the Texas Sunset Commission. They basically have a legislative branch or an office within their legislative branch that they fund, that they staff, that on a periodic basis reviews and sunsets. I mean, they sunset each of their agencies, and they have full-time staff that review them to ensure that these state agencies are doing what the legislature intended when those agencies were created and the programs with which the agencies oversee. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a positive thing. I think it's a process that strengthens the legislative branch, and you look at the three branches of state government. After I started looking at this, I also learned that last, would have been in 2011, the legislature in Minnesota passed a sunset committee very similar to what we contemplate here, where they have legislators that sit on an oversight committee, where they have staff that review these state agencies on a rotating basis. I believe that this makes good policy. It requires us to dig into these agencies. You know, as we come here on a annual basis and work their budgets on a biennial basis, agencies come in front of Ways and Means primarily and have their budgets reviewed 3 or 4 days. If they're a large agency, perhaps a week or two. But we really don't, as legislators, I believe, have the ability to dig into those agencies. We do our oversight. We do, I think, a fairly good job at that as it relates to the budget process. But as it relates to digging into these agencies, and these boards and commissions, to ensure that they're accomplishing the goals that we as a legislature had laid out when they were created, I don't think that we do as deep of a review as we should. And this would set up a process that would allow that to happen. Is the language in the bill perfect? Maybe, maybe not. It could be tightened here or there. Perhaps the dates could be looked at. But I would encourage you, as you look at this particular bill, to consider it in a positive way. Work the issues that are addressed here. I'd be willing, beyond this public hearing, to work alongside this committee and others in the building that are interested in, I think, a good government process that would help us as a legislature fulfill the duties that we're elected to do as representatives of the people. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions, or I'd allow you to get back to your other business.
Questions from the committee on this bill? Representative Kinnegar, you always are good for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming and presenting this. I'm just curious was it kind of arbitrary how you got to the sunset dates for the different?
Yeah, I mean, there was not necessarily any anything other than we had to select some and we put dates on them. That's really it.
Yeah, okay,
so
thank you.
They could all be wrong, they could all be right. You know, we could work on it if this committee decided that they wanted to work on the issue.
Yeah. Other questions from Representative Richardson?
Just a quick comment that Peter Drucker, who's had such experience and is kind of the guru for management of successful corporations, said that a large corporation should reinvent itself every 5 years. In other words, every 5 years, take a look at what's our mission, what's changed, what is the competition doing, all of those things. And in state government, it would be wise for us to periodically be doing the same thing. Otherwise, we just keep funding something that's always been funded because it's still there, instead of asking, is it efficient, is it effective, is the need that for which it was created still needing to be dealt with, or is it just there? And so this would actually be an excellent vehicle to enable that to happen.
Just an additional comment, Mr. Chair. This is something that the federal government does, that the Congress does. You'll hear that such and such agency hasn't been reauthorized, and they're on a certain number of extensions. They basically sunset federal agencies, and they have to come up for reauthorization on a periodic basis. So again, it's not a new concept.
Other comments, questions, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Senator. Like the concept, it's intriguing. You mentioned Texas. Are there other states that have done this or sort of looked at this seriously, or what's the playing field across the national scene as you're aware of it?
So I know Texas has the longest standing process that I'm aware of. The only other state that I know that does this, and I haven't done an exhaustive study, to be honest with you, but I did have a conversation with a senator from the state of Minnesota who sponsored a sunset advisory committee. It's very, very similar to what we have envisioned here in the state of Minnesota within the last couple of years. And they were a split legislature at the time, where they had Republicans and Democrats working together on this, and had a Democrat governor that signed a bill.
Great. Thanks. Thank you. I'm curious, you know, the skeptic in me perhaps, I don't know, because you mentioned the federal process of reauthorization of agencies and their functions. And so I'm looking at this bill, you know, part of it really is intriguing, you know, about having, you know, accountability of our state agencies. But how does that differ from our ways and means process where they essentially do reauthorize the services and the programs within each agency and decide whether or not they're functioning properly or delivering the service the way the legislature wants to, and then they decide whether to fund it or move the money somewhere else or to defund specific programs or services? So how does, because part of me thinks that, well, we kind of do this through the Ways and Means process. So explain to me the concept, how it differs.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. Quite honestly, this process would allow a much deeper look at the agencies. You'd be able to dig in. You'd have professional staff that would review each agency on a more detailed basis. As I mentioned, the Ways and Means process, I think we do as good a job as we can in a condensed, short period of time. But you have agencies that come in with their budgets, and you have hearings for 1 or 2 days. Larger agencies, those hearings last longer. I mean, you have a longer period of time to review them. But you really, it's a very high, in my experience, it's a very high level review. And you don't have the opportunity to dig into the details like you would if we had this process in place. Again, I see this really as a process that strengthens the legislative branch of government as well. And, you know, I'm always looking for ways to increase our ability to impact and influence what occurs in our state, as I believe our duty as elected representatives of our constituents.
Representative Lively.
So the question I have, you mentioned earlier about the federal government doing this, and then they have these extensions, continuing extensions. So if I read this correctly, 1 year before the sunset, these reviews would start. So what's the fallback then at the end of that year if we haven't reached a conclusion? Or, I mean, is there an automatic fallback? Does it take some legislative action, or what?
Well, I would guess that it would require a legislative action. You know, the word notwithstanding comes to mind, and you know, the legislature can say notwithstanding ORS, we're going to do X, and sure. So that would be a process that we could undertake.
Thank you. Other than some minor points here and there that you know, remain unanswered, perhaps, but I think it is an interesting concept and worthy of conversation for sure.
Well, I look forward to partaking and participating in that conversation.
Thank you very much for taking the time and visiting our committee. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
With that committee, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2373. And we'll come back to it, and we have a full complement here. I'm going to open up a work session for the possible introduction of committee measures. Representative Lively.
Chair Holby, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 1355 dated 02-18-2013, LC 1833 dated 12-10-2012, LC 1834 dated 12-17-2012, LC 2632 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3371 dated 2-6-2013, LC 3402 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3438 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3446 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3535 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3548 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3645 dated 2-4-2013, LC 3646 dated 2-1-2013, and LC 3648 dated 2-11-2013.
My turn. Representative Lively moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 1355 dated 2-18-2013, LC 1833 dated 12-10-2012, LC 1834 dated 12-17-2012, LC 2632 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3371 dated 2-6-2013, LC 3402 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3438 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3446 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3535 dated 2-7-2013, LC 3548 dated 2-14-2013, LC 3645 dated 2-4-2013, LC 3646 dated 2-1-2013, and LC 3648 dated 2-11-2013. Any discussion from the committee? Seeing none, is there any objection to the introduction of these LCs as committee bills? If not, the measures are introduced as committee bills. Thank you. With that, I'm going to go back to opening a public hearing on House Bill 2620, which Bob, I let the representative introduce the bill. If you remind the committee what it is, and we'll
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2620 makes findings on regional and community-based governance and the requirements of state agencies, directs the governor to develop a reorganization plan for certain agencies to implement regional and community-based governance, and submit that for consideration during the 2014 legislative session.
Thank you, and we'll call up people that are for the bill first, and that would be Mike MacArthur and John Chandler. Welcome, gentlemen. Good afternoon, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm here really speaking as the convener of the North Central Regional Solutions Center and Steering Committee. I've only been involved in the regional governance, regional economic development since 1992. Back in the mid-90s, I chaired a regional strategies group that employed a certain staffer by the name of Greg Smith in that process.
You fired him?
Shut up. We broke him in. But in preparing for this testimony and looking at this bill, I was reminded of an earlier executive order that I've forwarded to your administrator and now have provided copies. This is an executive order that was issued in 1968 by Governor Tom McCall, and it's interesting, if I may read the first paragraph. Overlapping boundaries of state, local, and federal programs have created a chaotic, inefficient operating system which leads to confusion among public officials and citizens and to a dilution of effective coordination and implementation of public programs. So we've been trying to solve this problem for a while, and Governor McCall recommended we create 14 districts. We have a system now that's working. I'm chair of one of them, or convener of one of them. There are 10, approximately 10 or 11, it depends on how you count the East. And I would submit that they're working quite well, and that this bill, I think, helps move that process along. It looks to me like what we're trying to do here is include perhaps more state agencies. And we have the basic five that come to our meetings, that are involved, that are located, in our case, at Columbia Gorge Community College, housing, Business Oregon, ODOT, DEQ, and DLCD. But, of course, in our region, ag's a big deal, so sometimes we bring ag to the table. Counties are really bought into the system. Counties do quite a bit regionally in governance anyway. This approach to economic and community development through the regions makes a lot of sense. And this, I believe this bill helps develop that. It perhaps brings in other state agencies. I talked to a county judge in Malheur today who's working on a big project out there that really would help economically in that really hard-hit part of the state. And he's working with Dogami Water Resources, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, not typically the kinds of agencies that are involved in community development, but they're crucial to getting this project done. So while I think this particular proposal would help move this process further, we've been kind of building the bicycle as we were riding it in the new form of regional community solutions that has been put in place by Greg Wolf and the Kitzhaber administration. And I think there's some pieces in the governor's budget that are going to help solidify that. But, you know, it's not often that you get to tell the governor what to do and have him do it. And I think in this case, you've got that opportunity. So I think this is a good bill.
Thank you. I mean, it would be interesting. He could veto this bill, too, and say, no, I'm not going to do it. But you'd introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, in support of House Bill 2620. This has been an interest of the home builders and me personally for many, many years. The original community solutions teams we came up with Mr. Wolf and myself and others back in the 90s under Kitzhaber 1, the idea being to somehow get agencies to talk with each other when they're dealing with the citizenry and dealing with local governments, to have them co-locate, administer their programs in as complementary a fashion as they can, and to do what we could to break down the silos. That's been continued. The economic revitalization teams, we were involved in the creation of that particular nomenclature, and then on to the whatever we're called today. And the idea here, I think, is critically important. The bill has two immensely necessary things, from my opinion. One is to continue that work and and keep agencies talking with each other, with breaking down those silos, getting able to look out bigger windows each time we have another run at this, so they can see what's going on outside of them, working with their local partners, working with the private sector. And you'll notice that the bill is completely content neutral, which I think is critical. We're not trying to change the rules here, whatever the rules are as adopted by this body or by the agencies, but when they are adopted, they're administered in as sensible a fashion as possible. And so the consumers of state policy, the recipients of state policy in terms of permit or local governments, we don't have to play 20 questions finding out what it is we're supposed to do, but there's a system to allow the state services and state requirements and whatever they are, environmental, economic, et cetera, to be administered in a fairly efficient fashion. That's part one. Part two is in paragraph subsection two, looking at the reorganization plan. This is another interest of ours for many years. Back into the Kulongoski administration, and I don't know how many of these work groups I've been on over the years, we took a run just at water permitting, because our thesis statement was that depending on what kind of project you're trying to do, you can have to talk to as many as 5 or 6 or 7 different agencies, all who touch some part of the process, and oftentimes, from a developer standpoint, by the time you get the 6th or 7th agency straightened out, the first one is off the rails again. You got to run back around the circle. And it was wonderfully fun in a tedious sort of way, and provide a lot of work for lawyers and consultants, but really didn't necessarily result in better environmental outcomes or economic development. This is a conversation that needs to go forward, I believe. Again, content neutral, but at least look at, if you were designing state government today, knowing what we know about technology, knowing what we know about the needs of our state, our economic, environmental, and others, would we design the current process? And I would submit to you the answer is absolutely not. And if that's the case, then you back up into what should state government look like? How do we deliver services from housing to transportation to environmental quality to water resources and so on and so on and so on in as efficient and cost-effective and environmentally and economically beneficial manner as possible? This is a good first step. I think it'll be a wonderful conversation. We hope to be involved in it should the bill move forward and the governor actually sign the thing. We'd hope to be invited to participate. I commend it to you. Hope encourage an aye vote. I'm glad to take any questions.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate the testimony and, you know, the look back in history as well. Any questions from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I appreciated your testimony, too. As you well know, in the building trades, sometimes our agencies that provide us oversight and so forth can be our friends, but they can also be stumbling blocks to profitability, you know, and especially in rural Oregon, where you might wait for your state inspections for electrical or plumbing and so forth and so on. There's one inspector that does each, and, you know, if you're out in a place like Antelope or someplace out in the middle of the boonies, so to speak, you know, you might, so-and-so may show up to do your electrical inspection, but the plumbing guy has a family problem, an issue, he's sick, he can't get there, so that project can't go forward, right. And you can't cover up your drywall until that's accomplished. So those are just examples of the types of things that I would hope this kind of work could result in something that is, as I think Representative Clem clearly laid out, the mindset behind this is, as a state, how can we get to yes?
Right.
What, you know, if that's our mindset as a state, when someone comes to us saying, we want to do this, this is what we think would be in our best interest or the best interest of our community, as partners in that, as from the state perspective, how can we help you get to yes? What do you need to do? Because we want you to be successful. But that's just a mindset that I would love to see permeate this whole discussion, and I'm sure you probably share some of these same sentiments from the whole home builder perspective.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, absolutely. And you raised a point that I meant to make earlier, and if, with your indulgence, I'll do so, and that is why this bill should go forward now. Is in my estimation, we have as good a batch of agency directors as I've ever seen in this state across the board. At least the ones that we deal with, we, as Representative Johnson indicated, from the home building standpoint, we deal with an awful lot of state agencies in various capacities. They're creative, they're bright, they're as frustrated as the private sector is oftentimes by these silos, the barriers, the artificial divisions of molecules of water between Agency 1 and Agency 2 and Agency 7. I think we've got a good team in place. Governor Kitzhaber's obviously been engaged in this issue from his first administration going forward. I think if we're ever going to really tackle this and get the people around the table to talk about how do you get to yes, with the standards we have in place, it's not like Oregon has lax environmental or other consumer protection standards. We keep those rules right where they're at and then figure out a way to implement them more effectively. That, I think, benefits everybody, and we've got a good team to work with. I think the agencies I've talked with, not about this concept, but it's in general, the idea, will be very supportive of figuring out ways to do their jobs. They're all professionals, and they care about what they're doing. It's a way for them to be better at their jobs as well and to advance the interests of the state and probably save a few bucks for those of you who are on the Ways and Means Committee, which might come in kind of handy later this session, I suspect.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments. I'm not sure I agree totally with everything you said, but I think
pretty darn close, though, Mr. Chairman.
Some of the consumer protection agendas still, I think, need to be accomplished in the state. Like I've told you before, I can get a warranty on a 2-year warranty on my toaster, and so.
My goodness, look at the time, Mr. Chairman.
So, any other questions from the committee? Not seeing any. I appreciate your testimony. I appreciate you also testifying on this bill and giving us your perspective on it. Really important. With that, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2620 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2373. Representative Thatcher.
Do I get to go down there and talk to my fellow committee members?
I think we could see you better if you were down there.
Okay, all right, sure.
Bob, give us a quick summary of the bill before Representative Thatcher can get right to the meat of it. So,
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2373 sets a schedule for abolition of state agencies, establishes a joint legislative sunset advisory committee, and staff to review and report on specific criteria relating to agencies set for abolition, appropriates general funds to the committee, amends requirements of administrative rulemaking process, directs the Department of Justice and Department of Administrative Services to facilitate agency compliance with 5-year reviews of administrative rules.
There you go. And if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
All right. Representative Kim Thatcher from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh. And yes, does this sound familiar? I just kind of wanted to touch on a couple things that weren't necessarily mentioned, maybe give a little frame of reference here. A state agency is defined under current law to mean an officer, a board, commission, a department, division, or institution in the executive or administrative branch. So, ironically, we're not talking about anything in the legislative branch or the judicial branch. We're just talking about the executive branch. And let's see. Yes, I think it is kind of odd to be coming before you to say we need to create another government entity to see if we can get rid of some government entities. But that is essentially what this would be doing, either to streamline or consolidate or do something that may be a better use of our resources. Well, trying to get a handle on even how many agencies are in existence, we found over 600. That's the top number. That might not even be accurate because it's really, of course, how you define it, because there are subdivisions like subcommittees of committees that are out there. There are different special work groups for different agencies. And as we all know, all these different entities have different roles to play. And are those roles still relevant? And just like Senator Starr was saying, and it isn't a new idea. Going back to the 1800s, Governor William Lord asked the legislature for their support in abolishing unnecessary boards. Then we move up to Governor Hatfield in 1959. He wants to streamline several boards. In 1977, 49 boards were reviewed. On and on. This is more comprehensive than just the boards. So, and I think what you were asking earlier about isn't something like this done in the Ways and Means process. Yes, something like it is done, but this would be sort of modeled after the joint, the tax credit committee, where they were reviewing all these different tax credits, which would, you might argue, might be something that the revenue committee would do. So in this way, it would just be a little more intensive look. And I think there was a really good quote from the Eugene Register Guard. They had an editorial on the audit. So there was an audit that came out, and I'll just mention real quick one thing from the audit. So there's no single source listing all the boards, and not all boards have readily accessible information about their current membership, contact information, activity, and results. So some of the work from resulting, I think, from the Sunset Commission would also play into the goal of transparency and things like that. So the audit recommended that the governor and the legislature and the Department of Administrative Services work together, come up with a comprehensive listing of all boards, and I would add, you know, all these other things too, advisory commissions and all that, and determine, you know, if they're worth it. The Eugene Register Guard said this: at their worst, however, boards can become self-perpetuating protectors of privilege, advocates of narrow interests, generators of unread reports, we've all had stacks of those, and impediments to productivity. State has no good way to determine whether a board is the best or worst type. And they ended with saying, the strong possibility of duplication needs to be examined. At a minimum, it should be possible to obtain an accurate count of state boards and commissions. And maybe the first step is to appoint a board. So this bill would certainly get into that. But there's also some additional little things that are in this bill that weren't discussed earlier. It has to do with administrative rules. In 2011, in the printed annual state report, there's 11,000 pages of administrative rules. So one part of this bill just says that one thing is that the administrative rules can't overstep state law, just reiterating that. And then second, there's a section that requires state agencies to post the proposed rule changes on their websites and let people know where they can read them on the web, and let them know when they send out the rulemaking notices. Have this on the web. There really is, it's very difficult to access proposed rules and notices unless you're in the know. So that would help clarify that and help that process be easier to follow for people. And the third is a follow-up to a bill that I was able to get passed back in my first session in 2005. It was a new law, and it was requiring agencies to do a five-year look back after they adopt administrative rules to make sure that the rules are doing what they're supposed to do. Maybe they need to be adjusted, maybe they need to be eliminated, whatever. And last year we learned that some of the agencies are not necessarily following this obligation and fulfilling it. So this bill would just ask the Attorney General to send out gentle reminders. It doesn't say that in the bill, but that was the intent. The gentle reminders to the agencies about the responsibilities, and then also ask the Department of Administrative Services to use their current internal auditing functions, you know, maybe a Survey Monkey, whatever, just to send out to these agencies asking them if they're following the law, just to kind of, you know, give them a little notice that they should be looking back and reviewing these things. So I'm happy, as well as what Senator Starr was saying, to look at any proposed amendments. And I think that we need to get serious about looking at all these things that we have in our government and assessing whether they're worth it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Thatcher? One of the things that I got, one question that, you know, strikes me in the bill is that it starts out with the presumption that you abolish state agencies.
Yeah, that does sound like
it's sort of the default. And so if the legislature happens to have a lazy session, which I haven't seen one yet, but say they did and they forgot about looking at an agency, and they just by inaction get abolished. So it seems like, you know, it seems a little drastic approach.
Well, first of all, Chair Holvey, thank you. I am sure that the agency that is on the list would be well aware and make sure that we do not miss them. So,
but they don't control.
Food for thought.
They don't control the gavel, though. If they decide to take the day off or something, I'm just. So it's a. It's an interesting concept, and trying to weigh how this works with our budgetary process and the overlay of that is I think worth thinking about. So I appreciate your and Senator Starr's interest in this, because I agree there are a lot of boards and commissions in this state, and it's very difficult to know what all of them are doing.
Chair Holvey.
Mr. Holvey, real quick, we do not even know how many there are. We really don't even know for sure. So
I bet you somebody does.
Does, I bet you Representative Richardson might know.
Not at all. And Ways and Means really doesn't have the time, the capacity to do it. It's, the way you would get to it would be zero-based budgeting, where you'd go to each one and you'd say, okay, let's pretend that this didn't exist and start with what's their mission, how many people are involved, what's the technology, if it wasn't existing today, would we create it? If so, what it would look like? Mm. That is a great thing to happen, but the responsibility of Ways and Means is to craft budgets. Mm-hmm. And so this, however, it finally looks, it really is important to do, because it would put into a more policy, non-Ways and Means venue the opportunity to go through periodically and look at all agencies and commissions and so forth. And it really needs to be done, and it's, we have no vehicle to do it presently.
Thank you. Other comments, questions? Representative Kinigar.
Okay, well, thank you. That just raised the question for me. I wonder if you have any studies that show what has happened as a result of Texas. I'm also curious about what they might pay, but I know that's not our issue here, what the fiscal might be. But, you know, just to the concept of the policy, what changes may have come out of that process by following that set of actions versus how much change is dynamic flux is there in other states, state agencies, who may pursue other ways of looking at this? Do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kenny Geyer, I don't know the specific outcomes of or of studies of what happens in Texas when they review and try to clean house versus the states that just want to accumulate and be everything to everybody. But it seems logically that the ones that want to be everything to everybody can't sustain that for very long and you know, need to do something. And that's what I'm suggesting here. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony today, and I know you have another agenda item at 2 o'clock, so we will excuse you. Thank you for bringing this forward and giving our committee a little briefing on that. Up next, I have John Charles on House Bill 2373. Good afternoon, welcome, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, President of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization based in Southwest Portland, and I'm here to support the bill. And while people were testifying, they reminded me of an interview that I think I saw during the Reagan era when it was on 60 Minutes or something, and a gentleman had been appointed as head of the Rural Electrification Administration. And a short while later, he resigned, which is why he was being interviewed. And he said, look, we've done all that we can do. We came, we saw, we conquered. There is nothing left to do, but like a ghost ship, we continue to sail. And I'm not going to get up in the morning and punch in and pretend there's more work to do. The agency apparently can't be killed, so I'm leaving. And that's not uncommon. I think, you know, in the private, for-profit sector and the nonprofit sector that I work in, customers and consumers do have a way of signaling to you that your service is irrelevant and you go out of existence. But that is much less likely to happen in the government sector for a lot of rational reasons. So I think the bill is a good one. I'm personally not wedded to exactly how it's written or the order in which things are reviewed or how they're reviewed or any of the wording. I think you could do it 500 different ways, but I think occasionally it's good to ask, as the legislature had to do a short while ago for the Betsy program, when it simply exploded out of control. And even in this body, people couldn't ignore anymore the fact that it was out of control and needed to be changed. And I will call to your attention one category of entities that do not appear to come under the purview of the bill, but might be worth considering, and that is a series of government-sponsored entities, or GSEs, which include, well, two in one category, the Energy Trust of Oregon and the Climate Trust of Oregon, and then another category that I would call state-sponsored, sort of pseudo-venture capital funds, such as the Wave Energy Trust, Onami, Otrati, Oregon Inc., various other signature research centers, I think you call them. In the first category, Energy Trust of Oregon and the Climate Trust, they only exist because you pass laws mandating something, and you needed a private nonprofit to undertake certain things, and so those organizations were formed. And in the case of the Energy Trust of Oregon, they are almost all their money comes from surcharges on ratepayer bills. So if you are a customer of the two big gas companies or the two big private IOUs, you're paying what is now basically a 6% surcharge, and Energy Trust over the next biennium is likely to take in and spend over $300 million, and it's not going to pass through this building. It's not going to go through Ways and Means. It's just kind of washing through automatically. That's a lot of money, and ETO was supposed to, well, the funding source for ETO was supposed to have ended March 1st, 2012. It was given a 10-year lifespan originally, and then in 2007, it was quietly, as part of a much bigger Christmas tree bill, extended to 2026 without any public discussion as to why the 10-year time sunset was to be extended another 14 years. That's more than $1 billion of money from ratepayers that's going to go on if something hasn't changed. So you might want to consider bringing groups like that in. The Climate Trust of Oregon, their money comes essentially from mandated fees on new power sources that you created. In the case of the others, the Signature Research Centers, yes, those entities are reviewed, their expenditures are reviewed in Ways and Means, but rarely down there, and I've testified several times, does anyone ask why we are doing this, what these entities do? Do we need them? What do they produce? The whole basic question of why. So you might want to consider amending the bill to bring in GSEs to be reviewed once in a while for the same reason you're doing it for the other agencies in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of this panelist? Not seeing any. I appreciate your testimony on this. It's a very intriguing bill, I must say. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2373 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2381. Bob, would you give us a little preview of House Bill 2381?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2381 authorizes state agencies to establish voluntary contribution programs for projects of public interest for which no or inadequate funding exists. Directs the Department of Administrative Services to establish voluntary contributions account in the general fund and subaccount for each program established by a state agency, and continuously appropriates monies to the designated program subject to expenditure limitation authority, declares emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. And we have Representative Barnhart, I believe, to give us a little background on House Bill 2381. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from Central Lane and Linn Counties. This bill actually started with another bill in the last legislature in 11. By Representative Buckley, who was proposing a similar idea for a particular agency. I saw that and thought, well, why would you restrict it that way? If an agency can demonstrate that it has projects that are worthy of funding and of a public interest and for which no adequate funding exists, why not ask the public to support it? What the bill essentially does is set up a framework within which the Department of Administrative Services sets up a voluntary contributions account with subaccounts for the agencies that decide to go ahead with this kind of a program. The agencies have a set of criteria in the bill in Section 1 for when they ought to consider doing this. And the bill in Section 2 indicates that the funds are continuously appropriated for the purposes that they were set up in the first place. I think it's pretty simple. It is completely voluntary on the part of the agency. No agency needs to do it. If an agency is entrepreneurial and has a project that they think they might be able to attract some public interest in, then they could do it. and DAS would be responsible for administering it. There is a provision for a web-based system for contributions, and I would suggest that if this idea takes off, that in a later legislature we may want to have some kind of a requirement for reports and public disclosures. At this point, this is simply enabling it to get going, and we certainly can ask for a report from DAS at any time, or the treasurer for that matter, on the use of the voluntary contributions account.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interesting piece of legislation. There's no language in here, though, that a contribution would not be necessarily tax deductible. It's just purely a contribution.
Correct. The tax law, current tax law, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the current tax law would make a contribution to a government entity for government purposes tax deductible if it's not in response to paying a tax under current federal and state law. So I thought it was superfluous. You don't really need that. If for some reason the general law changed, then that general law change would apply here as well.
It's always good to have the chair of the Revenue Committee. Thank you.
Under your description, then, that anything that the agency picked that it thought worthy of funding and of interest to the public, then would qualify it for being tax deductible if somebody gave to that particular fund.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's the sense of Section 1, Sub 1. The Section 1, Sub 2 requires that the contributions be in conjunction with the normal business of the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So that would limit the subject matter on which it could be, sure, they could request it. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't expect that a school district could, or an agency dealing with environmental issues could ask for money having to do with establishing an industrial policy, for example, mm-hmm, because they're different. They're different subjects. So number one looks really, really broad, but when you add some two, then it narrows it quite a bit.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing this forward. I'm trying to look at the unintended consequences that could come.
Always a useful thing.
Especially if there's two areas. One would be if it could be done really widely in a way that would affect the general fund somehow. And that would probably be only if it could be done in a way that becomes tax deductible for something that otherwise would not be. And so having only just a few minutes to kind of be thinking about this, I immediately think, well, what about BOLI? And BOLI decides that it really does want to promote collective bargaining agreements and so forth because that's good for labor. And so they set up a line item so that you could deduct to create unions and get a charitable deduction for that because it's going through the government. And that, I mean, there's better minds than mine that give a little bit of thought, could come up with a whole number of ways to do this. So are you aware of anywhere else where this has been done that we could take a look at and see, you know, how the, you know, what consequences have resulted?
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I'm not aware of where this kind of an idea has been implemented. I frankly hadn't thought to check.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Though I might add, I'm not sure that creating unions would be in conjunction with the normal business activity of BOLI.
Well, see, but this is pretty widely worded, and so if it is under the penumbra of that agency, and, you know, so I'm just trying to anticipate, right, the unintended consequences from something that sounds good that may in actuality cause difficulties for us.
Other comments, questions, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following on Vice Chair Richardson's thought, the one area that I see is at times our co-chairs who are elected and serve their constituency at times direct dollars in areas where they want to see programs either move or they may take dollars where they don't want to see that growth. What would be interesting is should a citizen choose to put dollars into a budget category that is contrary to the will of the co-chairs.
It's general fund.
Anyway, it's just an interesting concept. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Vega Peterson.
Yes. Hello. Thanks for bringing this forward. I was thinking about unintended consequences as well, but I was looking at more from the perspective of I'm worried about this becoming an excuse for unfunded mandates, where we say, oh, this is a good idea, this is great, go ahead and do it, agency, but we're not going to give you any money because you can use this voluntary pool for those kinds of things, in which case, really, we're saying that you can go ahead and do it, but not really, because we're not giving you any money. And, you know, we have enough issues, I think, about unfunded mandates coming out of the legislature already. I don't want to see an excuse for some more.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vega Peterson, we already pass a number of bills every session that specifically say in them this activity is authorized, but we're not going to pay for it, and we're hoping that you can go out and find some private money. We say it more elegantly than that, but that's what we mean. In a time of fiscal austerity, which is likely to continue for a long time, it wouldn't surprise me if the issue you consider to be a detriment may actually be, or a bug may actually be a feature. And that's an unfortunate admission to make, but I think it's probably true.
I appreciate using the computer terms, too. To
a bug is a computer term? any other questions from the committee? Representative Barnhart, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. We've had three very interesting bills to think about today, to chew on. Some really interesting concepts today, and this is one of them. And
Chair, I'm very glad to have been able to contribute to the committee's agenda.
Well, it's certainly been an interesting committee hearing so far. So with that, I appreciate that. I don't believe there's anyone else signed up to testify on House Bill 2381. Not seeing anybody jumping up, and I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2381. And committee, we will now move to our work session. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2143. And Bob, would you remind us of where we're at with House Bill 2143? First, about what it's about.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2143 is the bill that transfers responsibility for inspecting local detention facilities from the Department of Corrections to local governments. And the bill has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. And I should note for the committee, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, please go ahead.
Well, would you describe the or just briefly acknowledge that we are looking at a Dash 3 amendment committee, and so maybe you can just give us a brief review of that Dash 3 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The Dash 3 amendment removes the responsibility of the Department of Corrections to inspect local detention facilities if the county operating the facility has initiated a recent audit and provided certain information to the department for retention as a public record.
Thank you. And as I recall, we had two main testifiers on this bill, Daryl Fuller from the Sheriff's Association and Becky Strauss from the ACLU. So I was going to have both of them come up and talk to us a little bit about the Dash 3 amendment to this bill. And I realize you're not on the same page on this bill from the start, and but I thought it would be good for our committee to hear from both of you.
Thank you.
You have a preference on who goes first?
Not at all. You, Daryl.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Thank you for bringing the bill back. The Dash 3 amendments were at our request. We worked with Representative Nathanson. The original bill allows all local governments, not just counties, to do the self-audit. Only the counties are the ones that have the ability to do that right now. Cities, don't have a process for doing their own. So the Dash 3 amendments reduce the scope of the bill to just county jail audits only. So it takes the cities out of it. And then beyond that, it ensures that the information that the Department of Corrections currently reviews in its audit process will be provided to the Department of Transportation by the counties when they do their own audit. So the same sort of information that is available now through public records requests through the Department of Corrections will continue to be available through the Department of Corrections in their public record requests.
And just to correct you, you did say the Department of Transportation once, and you meant the Department of Corrections.
I'm very used to working with Department of Transportation.
Just to,
Department of Corrections.
Just to clarify the record in case somebody's going back and listening to this.
That is correct, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about the amendments.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I really apologize. I'm new to policy committees. Do we have a copy of the Dash 3 amendments?
Yes.
On the desk here. Should be on your desk.
Okay, so it's not on the system.
It should be on the system.
It's on the system as well. I know.
I'm sorry.
No, it looks
that's
like
okay.
The
take
Dash 1 is all
yeah,
on
I just have
the
Dash 1s. Mr. Sorry. Chair, I have the written ones here.
You have the written ones there?
I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, that's slow us up here.
My staff got it because I got this ahead of time.
You didn't have it in Willis?
Yeah, they open it.
Well, you can show him how to access. Sometimes there's two different ways to access amendments on OLIS, and
okay.
It's easy to miss it. It should be on there. We've got it here.
Yeah. Can I just have a comment?
You know how to use the system.
Representative Kinnegar.
Gerald, thank you for getting back to us also with the information about who funds it. That was one of the questions, because I think because of a question that Representative Richardson had asked, it raised the idea in my mind that while it's fabulous that the sheriffs are taking on a much more extensive investigation, if that's something that the state is in fact paying, we might want to look at that. But in fact, the counties are paying for that. That's their issue of whether they would want to see if their dollars are going for good use to have that extensive. So it's that piece of it is off the table. I feel very satisfied with the amendment.
Were you able to find it there, Representative Smith?
I'm not, but I have the paper version.
Okay.
I'm good, and I'm going to work with staff.
I could send staff over and bring it up on your laptop if you want.
Mr. Chair, I could also get my 16-year-old daughter to stop by. She's really good.
You could get my 9-year-old daughter to do better than I used to do on this.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, training legislators on new software during session is really a great challenge to us. We're really enjoying it. With that, I was going to give Ms. Strauss time to comment on the Dash 3 amendment and then the bill itself, if you wish.
Thanks very much, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. Becky Strauss, on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon, thank you for the opportunity to chime in regard to the Dash 3. Unfortunately, we just cannot get to a point here where we can not oppose the Dash 3 amendment at this point. We still believe that it is harmful for the public not to be aware of what is happening in our local jails, and this is a mechanism to increase government transparency, look at the standards that the sheriffs are using to evaluate the jails, and look at the results of that audit. It really seems like a small piece that the committee has an opportunity to address with the Dash 1s. Just for a bit of clarity in terms of the distinction between the Dash 1 and the Dash 3, without getting into the details of the language, because I don't have the Dash 1 in front of me, in my understanding of the substantive difference is that the Dash 1 would have required the sheriffs when conducting the audits to release all of the standards and all of the findings, whereas the Dash 3 limit that requirement to just the standards and findings that the DOC currently uses. So as I said, I think there are two issues happening here. One are that we certainly agree that the current DOC standards are not very specific, and so need a lot of work, and we do hope we can sit down and with a future bill or at a future time and think about expanding that. But the second issue here is really something that we can do immediately to address government transparency, which is have the public be aware of the standards that the sheriffs are using when they evaluate the jails. Take Representative Kenny Geyer's point very seriously in regard to the stream of money that's going specifically to the investigations, but I think we should also, if you allow me to remind you, that there is state money going to the operation of the counties and of the jails, and so with that and because of that, the public has a right to know what's going on in those jails. So at this point, we really can't get to a place where we can support the Dash 3, and thank you for the opportunity for talking about, to allow me to talk about that.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments and understand your position on it. But it also strikes me that, you know, as we've discussed, that's an issue that really wasn't taken on by this bill. It's my understanding that the Dash 3 does deliver what's currently required by our statutes of the Department of Corrections, and so that we're not really losing any transparency or diminishing the current standards or the current statutes as such. And this was really meant as an efficiency bill going forward, but I can appreciate your concern about those standards and think that, you know, it may be a topic for another day, another bill perhaps, than this one. I know the proponents of the bill put some work into trying to figure out how to make this work, and I'm comfortable that we haven't lost any transparency or lost any compliance to our current statutes. So, you know, it gives me a little bit of comfort to move this on, but I do recognize your concerns and think they are valid. But I'm just not sure they fit into this particular bill. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Not seeing any. Representative Lively, would you like to give me a motion on the Dash 3 amendment?
I think I would, yes. So, Chair Hovey, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated February 7, 2013.
Representative Lively moves the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2143. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to adopting the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing no objections, the Dash 3 is adopted. And before I take another motion, I'm going to recess for just a few seconds. I'll reconvene the House Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency Committee, and we are in work session on House Bill 2143, and there's been a motion to adopt the Dash 3 amendment, and we have done that. So now I have conferred just to double check that we did have the fiscal and revenue statements on the Dash 3 amendment specifically, which we do, and what would you say, minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, and so I'm comfortable moving the bill forward, so I'll open for that motion. Representative Lively.
Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 2143 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 2143 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Not seeing any discussion on that. Samantha, as usual, I like a roll call vote on passing a bill.
Representative Dougherty?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Excused.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2143, having received the required votes, is passed. And though it's a unanimous vote, I think I blew the idea of having consent calendars. With opposition to this bill, I think it's appropriate that it be carried on the floor. So would anybody like to explain this bill on the floor? Representative Johnson, thank you. I appreciate that. With that, Representative Johnson will carry the bill. Any other business? Bob, we've done our introduction of LLCs, public hearings, work session. All good. With that, thank you very much, committee, the House Committee on Consumer Protection and General Government, government efficiency is adjourned.